Good morning and welcome to Mountain Money. This is Larry Warren, and Alex Butwinski is sitting in today for Doug Wells, who continues to be out playing hither and yon. And Alex, we are in for stormy weather continuing.
Yeah, it looks like for the next week or so, we're going to have the monsoonal rains continuing.
And I've always had a hard time with the word monsoon in a desert, but we do get heavy rain from time to time and are expecting it today. You know, Curtis Ray last hour from ABC4 was saying there's a huge cell just on the other side of the Wasatch. So we'll see where it chooses to cross.
and last night they were saying that it might sit here for a while.
Yeah.
So it'll be enjoying our beautiful Park City ambiance.
And you know, that reminds me, it is a good idea this whole week. Shut off your sprinkler systems. Let's save some water. You don't need it on your lawn this week. Well, let's talk about the show today. We're going to start, if you're in any kind of business at some point, you're involved in the sales chain, no matter where you are in the company. So we're going to talk about selling. It doesn't matter if you're selling clothes on Main Street or mainframe computers, if they make such a thing anymore. So we'll be talking with a revenue coach, Kristen Zhivago, who's a widely published and lectures and consults with Fortune 500 companies. And she is going to talk about her book, Roadmap to Revenue, How to Sell the Way Your Customers Want to Buy. There's been kind of a revolution, Alex, in the way things are bought and sold.
Yeah, there has been, Larry, and she's going to explain that to us. And I found what she's talking about is quite interesting. It's a little different spin than what you normally read in a management book, so that'll be fun. And then after that, we'll have Alicia Stockman, marketing coordinator, and Jason Schneider, I hope I said that right, GM of Wyndham Vacation Rentals. And they're going to discuss the transition from Resort Quest to Wyndham Vacation Rentals.
Here in Park City.
And then following that in studio, we're going to have Jody Rogers, executive chef at the Brass Tag Restaurant and newly opened at Deer Valley. And they're going to serve Deer Valley-inspired comfort food, specialing in brick oven cuisine. And they have a full bar.
Okay, well, we'll talk about all of that. And 63 degrees in Park City now, expecting heavy rain. Something might be creeping over the mountains, although maybe it'll be south of us, perhaps over Wasatch County, but we'll see. And we will be back with Kristen Zhivago on how to sell after this.
Okay, you listen to KPCWY.
To get the local news and see what's going on in Park City.
For ski information in the winter and for avalanche information. Also, because all the Park City news, yeah.
And I like to keep it local.
I listen for local information.
NPR in the morning is fun to listen to.
Hey, so why do you listen?
I listen for the community resource and the wonderful music.
Very interesting array of music.
Randy Barton. I want to hang out with that guy.
Okay.
This is Kelly Miller at Assemble. We are thrilled to be a first-time KPCW underwriter. Assemble offers executive offices that may be rented on a short or long-term basis and an alternative to your local coffee shop in our business lounge. 435-709-7888 or on the web at assembleparkcity.com.
Juniper Landing is proud to support our local radio station, KPCW. Juniper Landing is a new, whole ownership townhome community located at the base of Canyons Resort, adjacent to the Waldorf Astoria Park City, with a model open daily. Our website is juniperlandingparkcity.com.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. Kristen Zhivago is on the line with us now, a revenue coach consultant in the art of selling with the book Roadmap to Revenue, How to Sell the Way Your Customers Want to Buy. Welcome, Kristen.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you here. And let's talk about what has changed and who this book applies to. Is this Main Street as well as business-to-business selling? And what has changed, I suppose, what has changed the whole game is the internet.
Yep, you're right. I'm hearing an echo. If you guys are
we're trying to work it out. Let's see if this is any better. And it is. Okay, very fine.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Sorry about that. Yeah, the internet has changed everything. We all know this now. I actually wrote in a previous book, I think it was 2004, that people were getting 60 to 80% of their questions answered on the web before they ever talked to a salesperson. So if you're selling something that involves a salesperson, you have serious issues that you're wrestling with, and that has changed everything. And then just the fact that they are getting the bulk of their questions answered on the web has changed everything as well, because it means you've got to put more emphasis on that. And then what's also interesting is, even though people expect to find all of their answers on the web, they often don't get them from the person, the company who's selling the product. They're more likely to get their answers from other customers.
Yeah, things like the obvious retail example is Angie's List, and travel consumers certainly are looking at hotel reviews and such. Is what we're going to discuss readily applicable to folks, whether they have a store here on Park City's Main Street or whether they're in a Fortune 500 company selling to another big company?
Yes, the things I'm going to talk about apply regardless of the size of company, regardless of what you're selling. The reason that it applies to everyone is because what I do is I come at the selling process from the perspective of the buyer. And if you're in tune with what your buyer wants, you're much more likely to sell more than if you're not. That's the basic premise.
Well, that certainly is, as I said, a different look on how most management books look at things. And you're a revenue coach. I wonder, what was your path to this roadmap? I apologize for that bad pun.
No problem. That's pretty good. Well, I started out selling machine shop tools. I was the first woman in the country to sell machine shop tools. I was 17 years old, and I was a senior in high school and, you know, full of myself, as all seniors are. So I assumed it would be fine, and the guy I was working for told me I'd make oodles of money. And so I went out there and started selling. Nobody had bothered to talk to me about machine shop tools and how they what really mattered. I knew a little bit about them, but not much. I was basically given a catalog and said, you know, go in there with your miniskirt and go for it. And at one point, I went into one machine shop and everything shut down. All the guys came out. The foreman came out. He said, okay, well, that's interesting. Never seen a woman doing this before. Tell me why your drill bit is better than the one I'm using now. And you know what? I couldn't answer his question. And that gentleman, bless his heart, took me on this road. And I decided I would do everything I could to learn as much about selling successfully and technology. And so I've been applying myself to both of those things for the last, oh golly, more than 40 years now. And just continuing to learn, stay on the bleeding edge, work with even the smallest upstarts.
And so what
just
you
focusing on that.
Yeah, and so what you say now is that customers already have 80% of the answers off the internet before they even talk to the salesperson, and
yep.
So the remaining 20% of those questions are going to be the hard ones.
Yeah, that's
you know, that's it's
a
not
really
going to be
point.
It's not going to be the easy stuff that is in the marketing pitch on the website.
That's exactly
it's going to be. Why is that drill bit better than my drill bit?
And what you say to me better matter to me.
Exactly. So, and that's one of the points you make, is that you need to learn how to sell to customers by asking the customers how they want to be sold to.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what they really care about.
So you advocate make the sale and then interview the customer.
Mm-hmm. And if you don't have any customers to interview because you're just starting out, then you interview likely prospects. But the beauty of this method is you only need about a half a dozen customers to start seeing the basics, the trends, the real things that are driving them.
Yeah, I thought one of the interesting comments that I read in your book was that if your customers aren't buying what you have, to sell, change your product. And that's often not easy, I would think, for some companies.
No, it isn't. And part of the problem with this method is that what you're doing is you're going out and finding out exactly what they want and making sure that you can give it to them. And that does sometimes, not always, surprisingly small number of times, it means changing the product. In my experience, in the hundreds of times I've done this with companies, it's usually because of the way they're presenting the product. They have a list of items they think are important to the customer, and when I get that list from them in my first interviews of my clients, then I go out and interview their customers, and their list is completely different. So if you just start aligning yourself with that list and figuring out how to marry what you can provide with what they want, you're going to start selling more.
So that's kind of basic sales, find out what they want and adjust your pitch accordingly. But it's not just adjusting the pitch all the time. Sometimes it's actually adjusting the product you're selling.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Exactly. Okay.
You also mentioned cats and dogs, and that there are roles for each of those pets in your book. Can you explain for people what you meant by that?
Well, I've done both sales and marketing and continue to do both, including running departments and touring them around. And the classic salesperson is a dog. They're eager. They get up. You knock them down, and they get back up, and they go out again, and they just run around, and they love activity, and they're friendly, and they shake hands, and they make friends with everybody. Marketers are cats. Marketers are much more laid back, much more analytical, much more shy, in fact, more introverted. And in fact, one of the problems with marketing often is that the marketers don't talk to the customers, and the salespeople do. And so the salespeople come back to the marketers and say, this is what they're telling me. And the marketers don't really believe it, don't really know what to do about it, because they don't know firsthand what is on the customer's mind. So I advocate to all marketers that they interview customers and find out why they bought, what was important to them, what they were thinking while they were buying. And fortunately, customers will tell you that after you sell to them. They will not tell you while you're selling to them. So while salespeople think they're getting the full picture, they're not. Marketers or anyone else can interview the customer after the sale and find out the truth.
Okay, so how important and how has marketing changed, and how important is it now when customers already have 80% of the answers? Is it harder to market to people? Is it harder for marketing to sink in?
Yes. And I mean, just looking at our own experiences, we are bombarded every day with messages. It used to be we were just bombarded if we watched TV or listened to the radio or drove down the freeway. But now, in our own email inbox, which is really where we do all of our work, we are bombarded. And
yeah, if you need replacement windows, I get about 6 of those a day. I'd be happy to forward them to you. Or anybody who needs replacement windows.
Yeah, exactly. So we are bored. We are tired of being pitched to. We are masters at turning off pitches, at ignoring them, at deciding. We're masters at saying, no, thank you, I don't want this. So marketers have to break through that, and the only way to break through it is with relevant content that addresses the exact needs of the customer.
And
have to do it, and you have to do a lot of it.
And do you see marketers moving that way?
Oh yes.
And what are some examples? What are people saying now that they might not have said in the pre-digital age?
People saying, as in marketers saying?
Yeah.
Well, marketers understand they need to do content. I think that's a given. One of the big questions for companies is how much they should invest in social media. And the answer is, ask your customers what social media they actually pay attention to when they're going to buy your product. So you can be up on Facebook, but if you're selling something to R&D engineers or, technical people, they're not going to go to Facebook looking. They wouldn't expect to find you there. They wouldn't go looking there when they went looking for your product. So one of the reasons you interview people is finding out where they would expect to find you and what they would hope you would give them when they got there.
What I was wondering also is, back in the day when I was doing some consulting, we had what were known as WIFMs, and that stood for What's in It for Me.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a concept that would be relative to what you're saying we should do with our customers?
Oh, sure. That is the concept. It's just that you have to make sure. What I did basically in the book is I had developed a method for finding that out, and I've spelled it out in the book. I've just basically given it away and said, look, if you want to find out from your customers why they bought, how they bought, what they were thinking when they bought, and what's in it for them, what was the real in it for them, just here's the method. And it's simple, telephone, but there's a lot of little tricks to it, so I spelled all those out in the book. So it's not new, it's just that people don't do it. It's like when you ask people, how do you lose weight, and everybody says, well, you eat less and exercise more. But then you ask the same audience, how many of you do it? And nobody raises their hand. So, yes, everybody knows their customers can teach them, but they're really afraid to find out what they're going to say, so they don't do it.
So step one in your process of revenue coaching is find out what the customers want, how they want to buy it by interviewing them.
Yep.
And then step two is take that information inside and debate it internally with your staff.
Yeah, exactly. And there will be things they ask for that might be difficult. Maybe there is a change to the product that you just can't do for the next 3 months or whatever. So you have to weigh those things and decide as a management team which ones you're going to be able to do quickly. And quite frankly, there are often big wins that you can get quickly, again, just by changing the way you handle information. And then in the background, you can work on the things that need to be fixed that are harder to fix.
And then next step is align your business to the way customers want to deal with you.
Mm-hmm.
And then follow that up with integrating the customer buying process to your back office, your support operation.
Yeah, so much of that should be automated these days. E-commerce and even what I think of as B-commerce, you know, the back-end B2B trading partners doing business electronically, so much of that is automated now. And when you think about it, the difference between a so-so experience and a delightful experience often has to do with how well they anticipate what you want to do and how easy it is for you to do it, because the web is all about doing things.
And the second part of that is your support group, or getting the support team and integrated into the sales process. And how do people go about doing that?
Well, what the interesting thing about the truth is it's very powerful. So if you bring the customer's truth back in, and it's not just one customer, it's a half a dozen or a dozen customers who basically answered a certain question the same way. Everyone said, this is my biggest problem. Or, and by the way, that's quite common. If I call people of a certain type who bought a type of product and I ask, what's your biggest problem right now? I don't care if they've never talked to each other, if they're in completely different parts of the world, they will come back and say, my biggest problem is X. Now you know what they're trying to solve. And if you can figure out how your product solves that problem, they're going to pay attention because you're coming at it from the standpoint of their need. So once that truth is inside the company and it's then debated with the management team and decisions are made, then it's a question of turning around to the support staff and everyone else and sharing that same reality with them. And it really does change how people interact with customers and what they stress and the decisions. Because all day long you're deciding, what should I do? Should I do this thing or that thing? And if you know what the customer wants, you're going to make the right decision.
Well, Kristen, one of the other things that you mentioned is branding versus brand.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things we are incredibly interested here in Park City is our brand. And I think that you have two different roles for branding and brand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's probably my most famous quote. But, what I like to say is that branding is the promise that you make. Your brand is the promise that you keep. And you keep that brand promise with your people, your processes, your products, your policies, and your passion. So if you look at all of those things, the place where most companies fall down is on processes. They don't think of themselves as a process-centric company. And when you look at the companies that really have done well in the last 10, 15 years or so, Amazon comes to mind. That company was started from the get-go to be a process-oriented, customer-delighting infrastructure company, not a product company. They didn't really care what they sold. They started out selling books, but now they sell everything. But they did it based on the infrastructure and the process. So the more you think about customer-delighting processes, the more money you're going to make.
Yeah, you know, that interesting. Amazon, I heard about how fast their service was and all that, and there wasn't really a book I even wanted to buy, but I bought one just to see if it was as good as everybody said, and I was stunned, you know, when 36 hours later this book lands on my doorstep. And I remember it. It was How to Build Adirondack Furniture. I still haven't bought. I still haven't bought one of those chairs because they're like $14 at Home Depot anyway.
Yeah.
But I just remember being impressed by that. Here, just time for one more question, and this one's a little off the wall. But what motivates salesmen? I mean, money, right? So is there anything else that motivates salesmen besides giving them a cut of the action in the form of a commission?
Well, actually, I disagree with you. I think salespeople, the good ones, are actually motivated by successfully solving the client's problem. This is today's good salespeople, okay? So they really care about the customer, and they really want to try to solve that problem. And figuring out how to solve that problem for as many customers as possible is what gets them up in the morning. So I think anything you can do, if you're a CEO or an entrepreneur, you want to motivate them, you figure out what's keeping them from doing that. What are the barriers to the sale, and how can you remove them?
And, of course, once the sale's made, you get the commission. It's very fine. Well, Kristen Zhivago, thanks very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
The book is Roadmap to Revenue, How to Sell the Way Your Customers Want to Buy. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
And Alex,
Monday.
I think
this is
Randy. We got a selling 101 from somebody who consults at high fees for Fortune 500 companies. So
and apparently she does it very well.
Yes. So when we come back, we will be talking about the vacation rental business here in Park City. Again, we're headed for a high of 71, possibly with heavy rain, 80% chance all the way through today and tonight, heading to a low of 52 tonight. And then thunderstorms likely the whole rest of the week. So, like we said before, turn off your sprinklers. You're not going to need them all week long. Let's put some water in the tank. And when we come back, we'll be talking about vacation rentals in Park City with the folks from Wyndham Vacation Rentals after this.
August 4th, Monday. This is Randy Barton with The Local View, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. today. Always informative and hopefully entertaining. Katie Stelfler, Camas, Utah, a stop for the tour of Utah. At 5:15, we'll discuss that. Sponsored by Mercer Automotive, Heber Valley Tourism, Alpenglow Solar. Local news with our news department, national news from NPR, and international headlines with the BBC. Tune in.
Hi, I'm Kelly from San Francisco Design, longtime supporter of KPCW. We provide a mix of European and mountain contemporary home furnishings for a unique Park City lifestyle. Our showrooms are in Park City and Salt Lake, and both offer complete design services. We're on the web at sanfrandesign.com.
Hello, this is Kristen Egan of Park City Realty Group, and I support KPCW. Every day, I listen to and especially appreciate local news and weather. This has helped me live, play, and sell real estate in the Park City area for the past 14 years. I can be reached at 435-714-1000. 1067.
This is Ryan Hoffman, branch manager at Mountain West Bank.
And Brooks Harbertson, commercial lender, sponsor of Mountain Money on KPCW.
We offer several products and services for individuals and businesses, including deposit and loan solutions.
Mountain West Bank, Kearns Boulevard, next to the theater, 649-3369.
Division of Glacier Bank, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Rentals. Jason, I had a little trouble with your last name there.
It's a tough one. It always has been.
Well, Alex, turns out you have trouble with the first name, too. But we'll
have my last name.
We'll forget about that. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what's going on with the transition. And what does the transition actually mean?
And the transition is you were originally called Resort Quest.
Well, yes.
Locally owned, and now a new name, new ownership.
Yeah, so I'll give you a little bit of the history of the company. So the company itself started in 1980 as Resort Property Management. Dan and Kim Meehan, two locals, longtime Park City residents, started the company in 1998. They joined with a number of other mom-and-pop vacation rental companies across the country to form Resort Quest. So it was a publicly traded company on the New York Stock Exchange. And then Wyndham Worldwide purchased our company, Resort Quest, 4 years ago. And so now is our transition. We're known as Resort Quest for the last 4 years, but we're changing our brand to Wyndham Vacation Rentals. So we kind of get the best of both worlds for our company. We're a lot of local history. We've been here for a long time, I think since Reagan was president, right? 1980, that's a long,
yeah,
long time ago.
That I remember dates those us. Days.
But also with the power of a worldwide brand, Wyndham. So we're really excited about the transition, and looking forward to another great ski season coming up in actually about 120 days, I think, by looking at the calendar.
Not that you're counting.
We're counting. We're always looking at winter.
So, but Wyndham also is in the hotel business, right?
Correct.
They own and operate a chain of hotels.
They own and operate a number of different brands in the hotel business, and they're also associated with RCI and some timeshare. So our company has a number of different divisions, but our division is strictly vacation rentals. So, and a vacation rental defined as, you know, a private owner would come to us and say, Alicia and Jason, hey, we don't live in Park City. We're looking for somebody to manage our asset here, to find renters for our property, for somebody to take care of the property, do the housekeeping, the maintenance, find the renters, and just oversee that asset while they're away. And we do that on their behalf, and have been doing that for, again, almost 34 years here.
So Alicia, how do you market? How do you put renters in beds?
Well, that's one of the nice things about having Wyndham on our side is we have a lot more reach than I think. Our biggest competitor right now is Vacation Rental by Owner. We have a lot of owners that we're competing with who want to do it on their own. And where we kind of excel is we have a lot of power. We have a team at our corporate offices that help us with revenue management, so we can come up with rate strategies. And then we can also use pay-per-click, so we have that budget to be able to spend online and look for new guests and new markets online through Google search. We have email marketing that we do, direct mail marketing, print advertising, out-of-home advertising, basically any way that you want to reach a guest, we can do that. And we're actually competing with VRBO owners on their own channel right now, so that's helping too. But it gives us an opportunity to reach new markets and more people with our global brand than we would as an individual. And I think that's where we kind of excel with our homeowners. We can get their property out to a lot more people and a lot more potential guests who are going to come stay for the winter. So we have a lot more channels that we can use.
It sounds like you're offering an A to Z, hate to say soup to nuts sort of service to your clients. How do you get people to have them give your property, give you their property? Jeez. Larry, having a little bit of
we know what you mean.
It's still early. I think in a number of different fashions.
I'm going to pour my whole glass of cold water on Alex.
There you go. I should have brought Alex some coffee.
Exactly.
So, you know, I think owners trust us for a number of reasons. One, we have a lot of history in this marketplace. I think by being associated with a publicly held company like Wyndham and prior to that, Resort Quest, you know, we're held to a little bit different standard accounting-wise than some of our other friendly competitors out there. So I think partially it's trust, and that comes from the history in the marketplace and also our affiliation with Wyndham. And then we, you know, by being here for that long, folks have seen us. We're right on Deer Valley Drive. They drive right by us on the way to Deer Valley or back on the way to Park City. And we actually manage properties in all three ski areas in the Park City area. So we have units at the Canyons, we have units in Deer Valley and also in Park City. And we manage private homes and condominiums. So we have, you know, with your soup to nuts analogy, that's a pretty apt description of who we are. We, you know, so if you're out in Schenectady, New York, you've just purchased a property in Park City and you want somebody to oversee it from A to Z, you can choose us and we can provide that service for you.
Okay, let's get down to the money topic. So how much does this service cost for someone with a condo that they want to put into your rental pool?
Sure. So we have a management agreement with our owners. The management agreements vary, but typically it's a 65-35 split. So 65% goes to the owner, 35% goes to us for the rentals that we put into the property.
Is that comparable to the split others have in town?
It is. It is. That's a market split.
Okay, so that means you're, a third of your revenue goes out the door to you in exchange for all the services. How does
Correct.
That compare with someone just marketing themselves on VRBO?
Well,
they're going to save money, aren't they?
Well, I think that depends. You know, they have, you know, certainly they're not splitting with somebody else, but they're doing either all the work themselves. So if you want to go work on a plumbing issue at 2 a.m, you have to factor in that time because those things occasionally come up in our business. You also have to deal with the money part of dealing with the consumer and also just all the things that go along with taking care of an asset. And typically most of the owners are not living in Park City. And so they're doing that from afar and they're doing that with either a, you know, somebody that does only housekeeping or does only maintenance and splits those things up. So you have to factor in all of those other costs.
So you're going to be spending money besides the VRBO listing fee anyway. You're going to have cleaners.
Absolutely.
Somebody has to hand a key over, et cetera, et cetera.
Somebody has to hand a key over. Somebody has to check on the property. Somebody has to do a security check following the guest that's departed. Somebody has to vet the guest before they come in, and we have the ability to do that. And it takes, you know, it takes an enormous amount of time to find a renter for a property and feel comfortable about that experience. You know, the other side for the renter is, you know, going direct with an owner can be an attractive thing, but the nice thing about going with a company like ours is we actually established a vacation rental bill of rights. So basically it states that a renter has some basic things that they should expect from their rental experience. We're a professionally managed property management company. We have the ability that if something does occur during a guest stay to move them to another property. And also they can trust that we're going to take care of that property. It's going to be a clean, well-maintained property. And that may not be something that they have that type of assurance with going directly with an owner.
I have to say, Jason, the 2 o'clock in the morning phone call, having rented some some rental properties.
That's worth any percentage.
That is definitely worth 35%. You know, our previous guest, Kristen Shivago, talked about finding out from your customers what they want as opposed to what you're offering. And you mentioned the customer bill of rights that you guys have, renter bill of rights. How does that fit into what she said and how did you develop it?
We, you know, the vacation rental market has definitely, it's grown over the past years. There's more rental units, certainly in Park City, than there were when I started working here about 12 years ago. But part of it, you know, I think the biggest reason that we came up with it was we were hearing about experiences from our consumers when they went and maybe they did go on a VRBO listing or an Airbnb listing and rented on their own. And maybe they showed up and the property was already rented to somebody else and they had nowhere to go but a phone number to try and find who they rented from to deal with this really tough experience. And so that's part of it. And we just wanted to point out that we are professionally managed. We're here 24/7 for the renter and we're going to take care of them. And that's an assurance when you're spending, you know, $10,000, $15,000, $25,000 on a vacation, you're traveling across the country. It gives you a little bit of peace of mind about choosing to go with somebody like us versus the risk of choosing to go with somebody directly. And it's not to say that people don't have good experiences with renting directly with an owner. I think that they do. But we have a lot of those experiences show up at our front desk during the winter. And that was happening across our bow and all of the other locations enough where we operate that we felt like, you know, we need to come up with a bill of rights so a consumer knows exactly what to expect from us and how it differentiates us from some of our competitors.
Okay, Alicia, you're marketing. So are you hearing from your customers about the PCMR veil uncertainty as to whether or not PCMR opens? Have you heard that yet? And if you haven't, I would imagine you anticipate hearing it. And what's your response now, or what's it going to be when they ask that question?
It really hasn't been as much of an issue with our guests who are booking now for winter as you would think. I feel like perhaps maybe just outside of our ski industry world that it's maybe not as notable. But I think that we're kind of treating it a business as usual, and we're doing the best that we can to get people in the units that they want to stay. A lot of return guests want the same home or rental unit that they stayed in before. So they definitely want to get that on the books early before, you know, someone else comes in and gets their property. So we've been trying to just get business on the books for winter and really treat it as business as usual. As far as guests asking about the lawsuit, we've been pretty upfront and honest about it. But I think that as a community, it's a bigger issue than just us booking vacation rentals. So really, we're just hoping to see what happens on the 27th.
Is there any need, though, to disclose if they're renting a ski and ski out property at PCMR? They may be able to ski out, but not in.
Yeah, that's the nice thing is at least, you know, we do have Deer Valley and we do have canyons nearby. So if someone does come and for whatever reason, if there isn't a resort at PCMR, there is still a lot of skiing within an hour drive. And that is one of the advantages of coming to Park City versus some other locations. We do have a lot of ski access. And if, you know, that comes up, we'll probably work on some kind of value add where we can shuttle people to the right resorts and maybe get them out and try out some Cottonwood resorts and see what we can do to make sure our guests have a really good skiing experience.
And obviously we'll all hope it never comes to that.
Of course.
And cooler heads will prevail. Okay, well, thanks very much for joining us, Jason Schneider of Wyndham Resort Vacation Rentals and Alicia Stockman, the marketing coordinator for Wyndham Vacation Rentals. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for your time. We appreciate it.
And we'll be back to have some fun talking about good food and a new Deer Valley restaurant after this.
KPCW's new classified ads are now on Facebook. Join the Facebook group KPCW Classifieds and Rideboard and see what's being sold, hired, rented, and searched for today. Post what you're getting rid of or what you're looking for free. Another service for locals, only in Park City, only on KPCW.
This is Eric Lee, attorney in the Park City office of Jones Waldo. As a Park City resident for 20 years, I'm proud to support KPCW. Jones Waldo provides legal services to residents of Summit County in many areas. 435-200-0085. JonesWaldo.com.
This is Christian Bohr with the Park City Chamber Bureau. Did you know that by shopping locally, you're supporting trail maintenance, our free bus system, and the many wonderful cultural and recreational opportunities in our community? When you shop or dine in Summit County, those dollars stay right here in Summit County. The Park City Chamber Bureau is pleased to support KPCW's locally grown radio show, Mountain Money. Remember, keep it local, keep it PC. The Park City Chamber Bureau is a nonprofit organization.
Additional funding for programming on KPCW has been provided by Long Reimer Weiniger Bepler, Estate Planning Family Law, LRW-LAW.com. Park City Nursery. We know what grows. ParkCityNursery.com. The Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you.
And we're here now with Jody Rogers, executive chef at Brass Tag Restaurant in Deer Valley. And it's newly opened, and it's featuring inspired comfort food, especially in brick oven cuisine. So, Jody, it sounds like that might be a pretty exciting venture to get involved in. And like, why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Well, it has been an exciting adventure, let me tell you. So we started researching this probably about just under a year ago, something that the homeowners were requesting that have apartments at the lodges.
So let's establish where this is.
That's a good idea. The physical address, 2900 Deer Valley Drive East.
So it's not at the resort in one of the base lodges.
That's right. It's just down from the Snow Park Lodge. You can see the pond, you know, the snowmaking right. ponds there right from the windows. And it's a location that we've actually catered to for a long time and now decided that it's a great place for a restaurant.
Did it have a restaurant in it before?
No, it did not. It was purely banquets.
So you created a restaurant from scratch?
We did. We had a kitchen there that we did use previously for other, you know, corporate groups and weddings and what have you. But now it is a restaurant.
So how, just the business of it, how do you go about taking an empty space, figuring out what equipment you need, what cuisine you want to choose? I mean, this is a whole long process.
It was a very long process. Thank God I have a great food and beverage director, Julie Wilson, that helps out. And we have a wonderful team of chefs that have been around Deer Valley for a while. The one thing we didn't want to do was replicate what we already have, although we wanted to keep the quality right there with
sure.
it. So, there's a lot of restaurants in Park City to compete with. And so we were looking for something different. And we thought that a big brick oven where all the food from the menu comes out of would be a really fun idea.
So carrying on that theme, the idea of comfort food, I was looking at the menu and, you know, I describe comfort food as mashed potatoes and meatloaf. And it sounds like this is little more substantial than that.
Just a little more.
Deer Valley would look at comfort food a little differently.
They probably do.
So we like to take that comfort food and give it that little Deer Valley twist. So the mac and cheese that everyone loves, we have a European spatzle. So it's nice and creamy and hearty, just like a mac and cheese, but it has that little gourmet flair to it as well. We're doing like chops of the day, so keeping that pretty simple. There's a burger on the menu that people are really enjoying right now. So right now we're in the stages of kind of listening to what we have and what the people are thinking and listening to the feedback. And over the next few months, we'll establish something that everyone really enjoys.
And certainly what everybody is looking for now is locally sourced ingredients.
You are correct, and we do a lot of that as well. So any kind of seafood that's on that menu, we will source as a sustainable seafood.
Jordanelle lobsters.
Yeah, it's amazing what you can do. The meats are Nyman Ranch. We work closely with them. Some of the greens from Daisy at Copper Moose Farm. You know, we're definitely looking into that.
I would imagine you have to be pretty flexible in terms of what's available locally, and that must be a challenge, meeting your regular menu.
It can be. The good thing with Daisy especially, we work with her ahead of time, so she knows kind of what we need and what we like, and she's over the years just been very prepared for us all the time, so we're lucky.
Okay, so you're the chef, and you have others helping, of course. But is it a challenge to cook in a brick oven? You don't, because you know, can you turn the temperature to exactly what you want?
And everything
you put in it is going to cook, isn't it, at the same temperature?
You would be surprised. We've had to learn how to cook again. The oven runs at about 600 to 650 degrees all the time. Takes a couple of hours to heat up. So what we've had to do is a lot of practice before we opened. Julie and myself traveled to California to trial the oven before we actually purchased it. And now Ryan Swartz, who is the chef who is overseeing that while I'm kind of out and about, but obviously there to support him, he's finding that a burger that might take 10, 15 minutes somewhere else is taking 6 to 8 minutes in this oven. The shrimp that we have on the menu is about a 4-minute process. So we're really learning that once it comes out of the oven, it also continues to cook. So everything we learned at school is just gone out the window.
Well, yeah, and the challenge would be also the balance. You have a table of,
right,
and they've ordered 4 different entrees that are all going to cook at different speeds and have to come out at the same time.
That is correct.
Is it just instinct, or do you have to keep charts, or are they charts in your head?
Charts in our heads for sure. Just practice. And yeah, I think a little bit is instinct. You kind of learn that as you're doing a la carte through the years anyway. Timing's just a little bit different, and everything is much quicker and a faster pace. So, and that table of 4 that orders all the entrees then has sides with it, so you've then got 8 dishes going out all at once. So we have an expediter there that helps to monitor that and try our best to get everything out to that table all at once.
Yeah, plus I would imagine you not only have the table of 4, but you have a bunch of other tables of 4 or 6 or 8.
That is right. And then you have all those wonderful people that love to come and sit at the bar and have bar snacks. And, you know, they've got some great TVs there for people to watch the sports and things like that. So, yeah, you have to take all that into account. And I'm sure once that Lodges gets busy, that people will want to stay in their room and they'll have to come down and pick up food, too. So, yeah, I can see some challenges coming, but we're ready for them, and I'm sure that we will do our best.
And this is why I could never be in the restaurant business. All those complications, and you have to be on every night. You can't have a bad night.
That is right, because if you have a bad night, everybody hears about it, especially with the social media anymore. So, yes, we have to be on all the time, and we definitely team talks every day. So very hard, but we love what we do.
Okay, let's talk about that, because everybody has a different route. What was your path that led you now to the brass tag?
Oh my gosh! So I started cooking when I was 24.
It wasn't at mom's side when you were 5?
Well, that's true. Yes, actually, let's go back even further. I used to like baking a lot. So I would cook dinner all the time. My grandmother used to do wedding cakes. So I guess that's where it originally comes from. I would accompany her all the time. I'll never forget the day I put my finger in a wedding cake and had to hide for about 4 hours until she calmed down. So it may have started there. And I kind of got the passion for that after school, high school, when I graduated. I had 2 choices in mind. I was going to be in the police force, or I was going to become a chef.
Wow.
2 very different routes. However, I was lucky enough, and I say that now, to get an apprenticeship, kind of like a stage, they call it, where you go in and trial with the company. And I went to the Sydney Boulevard Hotel right there in Sydney, Australia.
That answers that. You're Australia.
And worked there for 3 to 4 years, and that's a great job to start traveling. So I traveled, and that's how I ended up here, traveling and having fun. And funny story, I got here and didn't tell anyone I could cook because I was here to ski and have fun. But a couple of weeks into that, I couldn't help myself anymore. And after that, I kept coming back for 4 years. And after that, I was really lucky to land this job here as the executive chef at Snow Park. And then Empire came on board, so I took that over. And every year there's some kind of fun to be had.
So you have been working your way through the restaurants of Deer Valley?
Pretty much for the last 18 years, yes.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how much further we can go, but there's always a future, right?
Well, that's all good training. And I think I know the answer, because I know some mining history, but how did the name Brass Tag arrive for the restaurant?
Right. That took some time, actually. We hired a company, Struck, who came in, and they pitched us about 20 different names. And we went through the history of the location of the area, the location of Deer Valley, some fun ideas around Park City. Some of them may have been a little raunchy. Some were really fun. And we felt like that particular location was one of the mining areas in which, you know, Deer Valley had, what do they call when they kind of discover all of that? That's where we are right now, that particular lodges. And we all came up with the brass tag. There was a group of us that started voting on that. Marketing played a big part in this. And then Bob Wheaton had the final say, and we all kind of agreed on it. It was a lot simpler than what it sounded, believe it or not. A couple of weeks worth of talking, but the brass tag seemed to fit. So, and it was okay. A great way to market the restaurant and have some fun paraphernalia around as well.
And the brass tag is from the when miners went down, put your brass tag on
Correct.
A board.
Yes.
And then if there was an extra tag on the board and they were ready to close for the day, they knew they had a missing miner.
That's right. And so you'll find when you walk into the restaurant, we have some boards with some brass tags on it. The bar itself has a great map of all the mining areas around Deer Valley, which they actually laid into the bar itself with some brass tags, shows you where they are. And some fun history and some pictures around. So should be really fun.
Well, looking forward to trying brick oven cuisine at the Brass Tag in the lodges at Deer Valley. Jody Rogers, Executive Chef, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Alex and I will be back to wrap up Mountain Money after this.
Would you like to ensure the future of local public radio for the Wasatch Back? Join the KPCW Broadcasters Club and invest in local journalism. Broadcasters Club members receive outstanding benefits, including on-air recognition, a prepaid benefit card for your personal use during pledge drives, exclusive outings, events, and more. For information on how you can help build for the future of KPCW, please call Cindy at 435-513-2929. KPCW creates community.
I'm Monica Simos with the Park City High School Minor Detail Show, informing you of current events at the high school and in the community every Saturday from 7 to 8 p.m. Tune in Saturday nights or listen online at kpcw.org and like our Minor Details Facebook page.
Brought to you by UPS Stores, Elliott Work Group, Rich Fine Realtor, and Vail Resorts.
And welcome back to Mountain Money. Final minutes. Alex Butwinski, our guest host today. Thanks for stopping by.
Thank you, Larry. It was fun as usual. I think you might have something you want to tell our listeners about.
Well, you know what? We have Pledge Drive coming up 2 weeks from today, August 18th to the 22nd. Twice a year, we come to you and ask for your help keeping us on the air. If you like the programming you hear, all the news you hear, the great music, whether it's the classics or the new music that we put out every day, whether it's the public affairs programs, anything we do, the community forums we have out in the community, the concert broadcasts we do live, we sure would appreciate your support. And if you would like to donate a premium item or take part in a challenge grant with your company, please give us a call, either call Cindy or myself just here at the station. You'll find the numbers on our website quite easily to get the direct dial, and we'd sure appreciate it. This is the KPCW Who Donated Who Done It, the theme this year. So hope you can join us for Pledge. Starting in 2 weeks, we try to make it fun and as painless as possible. I want to thank our great sponsors of Mountain Money this day and always, Park City Realty Group, Mountain West Bank, the Iron Mountain Group, the Park City Chamber, Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. That's starting to roll off my tongue now, Alex.
Well, yeah, that's probably good for them.
Berkshire Hathaway Home Services, Utah Properties. Also, San Francisco Design and Jones Waldo, Holbrook and McDonough. Our guest today, Kristen Zhivago, the sales coach, revenue coach, with her book, Roadmap to Revenue. Also the folks from Wyndham Vacation Rentals and Jody Rogers. Delightful conversation with the new executive chef of the newest of the Deer Valley restaurants. Thank you all for joining us. Tomorrow it's This Green Earth with Chris and Nell. Always something interesting to talk about. And Alex, next week, anyone who eats may want to join in. We're going to have the editors of Consumer Reports who've sampled all the fast food restaurants of America. And boy, their stomachs must hurt now. But
that had to be a challenge.
And they're going to rate the best and the worst of the fast food restaurants. That's next week. This is KPCW Park City.